Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Joining us now, our friend Rich Rubino, who you normally hear on Mondays, but with the Democratic debate that happened tonight, happy to have him on to give us some analysis. Hey, Rich Rubino, thank you for coming back on.
You're welcome. Glad to be on again right after the debate.
You know, one of the things is we were watching the Cardinals game, and of course we had the Cardinals game here tonight on KMOX. It's tough to see the Cardinals lose. I think both things were a disappointment. So Cardinals get swept in the NLCS, and then I'm trying to monitor the Democratic debate. None of them are uplifting by any means. None of them put you in a good mood. So it was a no-win situation for many people in St. Louis tonight if they're trying to pay attention to both. Let me get your overall impressions of the debate stage tonight, a very crowded debate stage.
Yes, 12, which was pretty much a record for a major party to have 12 people up there. And obviously, you can only say so much. I mean, you have three hours long, but you know, you can only say so much for each candidate within that three-hour span. But I've always said that there's going to be one candidate that's going to get into that top three, perhaps the top four, right around the time of the Iowa caucuses, within about two weeks of that. You know, you saw this, for example, John Edwards in 2003 was at about 2% at this time. He ended up coming in second in Iowa. John Kerry was below Al Sharpton at one point. I think that it's going to be, I thought based on tonight's performance, I think Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is trying to court himself as a moderate alternative to Joe Biden. And also Amy Klobuchar, who gets very little coverage, the senator from Minnesota. I thought they both did extremely well tonight. I think Klobuchar in particular, what she would make the case of, and Buttigieg, they were almost mirror images on this. They would say that, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are trying to propose this, they're trying to propose Medicare for all. We're this close on something, and they say they're going all out. They're going to the extreme, I guess. And if they go out and they essentially, you try to have some sort of an ideological purity test, nothing's going to get passed. Mm-hmm. You saw this the same thing with Beto O'Rourke, who supports a mandatory buyback of all semi-automatic weapons. You saw them specifically saying that, you know, I saw Amy Klobuchar saying that, you know, the assault weapons ban is popular within both parties right now, and she was talking about background checks being popular. She said, if we essentially go to the rhetoric that you're giving, we're going to divide the country and nothing's going to get passed. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Democratic electorate is going to be very receptive to somebody who's going to say essentially we have to do what we can do and we can't have an ideological purity test. I think both of them are probably going to see their polls shoot up toward about a week or so before the election. And watch Amy Klobuchar, because specifically, when they ask her a question, she always has some sort of a piece of legislation or something that she's talked about specifically that she's actually done in the Senate. You know, she's known as the senator for small things, because part of the reason she has a 70% job approval rating in the state of Minnesota is that she tends to do constituent service type issues. You know, she tends to deal with issues like agriculture. Well, that's a big issue in Iowa, and she's going to all 99 counties in Iowa, for example.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see one of those two. I think you're going to see one of those two shoot up, and I think that they're going to get a lot of media coverage coming up.
You know, here's a little bit of what I watched here tonight, and I wrote a couple of notes down. And I wanted to get your thoughts on a few things. So you brought up Pete Buttigieg. He did seem very political in the sense that he was, you know, speaking like, you know, a political leader in some sort of authority position, the way he was handling some of these. And there was one moment where Tulsi Gabbard seemed to really shoot him down based on their disagreements on foreign policy, how you handle some of these situations with the military. What's interesting is both of them have a military background, so they have some sort of insight into it. But I thought Tulsi Gabbard really handled it in an interesting way when she confronted Pete Buttigieg. Do you really want this? You're really endorsing this. Tell me this is what you really want. And he didn't have a good comeback to that. So I thought that when pushed, he was able to keep to the script. But Tulsi was someone that was really going on the offensive tonight.
Oh, fascinating, with Tulsi Gabbard. So Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii, she has a niche market, and she's the only non-interventionist in foreign policy in the entire, basically, Democratic field. Bernie Sanders is close, but she's really the only one. And she was talking about the issue of Syria, and she was talking about regime change wars. And she said, essentially, what she called draconian sanctions that we had put on Syria. Essentially, she says that they're hurting the population, and I think she's suggesting that potentially you're creating more terrorists by doing that. I think that's kind of her suggestion. I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. But she basically said that, you know, that these talking about regime change wars, she's talking about Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pete Buttigieg got a little incensed with that and said essentially that, you know, it's not our presence that we are, why we are so, why the why, it's not our presence in Syria that's causing all this, it's the fact that we're leaving. And this is a fascinating argument because, you know, just from an argument standpoint, you know, there was a political scientist named Richard Pape a few years ago who came out with this synopsis about why there were so many suicide bombings. He said basically it's the idea of having a presence of foreign troops in another country that essentially leads to all this. So that there is this argument, and it's different than what all the other Democrats were saying. But now all of a sudden you have the Democrats becoming kind of the interventionist policy party in the Democratic Party. But also in terms of Tulsi Gabbard, you know, there's not a daylight's worth of difference between her on the left and someone like Ron Paul on the Republican side, because there was a debate performance very similar to this, and my mind went back to this. It went back to this in 2007 at the Reagan Library. There was a debate with Ron Paul and Rudy Giuliani, of all people. Mm-hmm. And Ron Paul essentially said that they're over here, meaning that we were attacked in 9/11 because we're over there, meaning that they were essentially angry at us for our presence. And Rudy Giuliani kind of went back and said, you know, are you saying that this was because of us? I hope you didn't mean that. And it was just, it ended up raising a lot of money the next day for Ron Paul. Tulsi Gabbard, the very similar ideology, which is essentially non-interventionist, and no other Democrat has that right now. I think you will see a lot of people potentially giving her money, and you also may see some folks from the libertarian right for whom foreign policy is the flagship or paramount issue supporting her on that as well, I think.
Let's go through some of these other people that we saw on the stage tonight. In one new face, that Tom Steyer.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
He really went for the jugular a few times. And I also thought he was the one that was always trying to make sure people remember he was one of the first to do this or one of the first to do that. So he was really trying to reinforce. He hasn't been on the stage yet or hasn't been on the stage to debate before. But, you know, it doesn't matter because he was one of the first to do whatever he was talking about.
Yeah, he was. Well, clearly this is somebody who's never run for political office before. You know, he was obviously told by his advisors, stay on message, talk about the corporate stranglehold, that type of a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't really get a lot of airtime mm-hmm. whatsoever, and he needed a lot of airtime. He really needed a Hail Mary pass because for so many Americans,
what they know of him
is these 30-second sound bites that he has.
Yeah.
But I don't really think he necessarily added anything specifically to the debate, as you say, other than saying, you know, I was the first to do this, I was the first to do that, and talking about his parents, talking about his background, which is kind of impressive. But the other thing, it was interesting that he's the only billionaire on the stage, mm-hmm. and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren will support the wealth tax, which would indirectly affect, you know, which would directly rather affect certainly the idea of billionaires. And he was asked, Bernie was asked a question, you know, what do you think of, should there be billionaires in the country? And he kind of sidestepped it. But, you know, this is somebody who actually is a billionaire, so he kind of has to, I guess it's kind of contradictory that in one respect, you know, if he supports the wealth tax, on the other respect, how does he argue that he himself is a billionaire? So it's kind of interesting, but I don't think he really did himself any favors in this debate whatsoever.
He's our friend Rich Rubino. American Politics on the Rocks is the name of his book. You can also search for him online at Rich Rubino. We're going to talk more about the candidates on the stage tonight during the Democratic debate on Overnight America KMOX. American Politics on the Rocks, that's the name of his book. You can also check out his blog online. His name is Rich Rubino in the Democratic debate today in Columbus, getting a recap of some of the things that happened. Let's look at a couple of the other people. I wrote just a few notes down. I thought that there was going to be a moment where Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden slapped the hand of the person next to him because, you know, Biden kept reaching out over to the Bernie side. Bernie kept reaching out to Biden's side. I thought there was going to be literally some sort of, wait, we're going to have to draw a border, kind of like when you were kids and, you know, you're sitting in the back seat and you're slapping each other like your brothers or whatever. And then mom would have to turn around and yell at you and said, stay on your own sides. I thought there was going to be a moment like that between them.
Yeah, Joe Biden, I mean, he's gotten in trouble for this because, you know, he's an old-style politician. You know, he goes back to first being elected to the Senate in 1972. So he went back to the time when senators, Republicans and Democrats, it was kind of okay for them to kind of slap each other on the back. You know, you debate during the day, then you go out and have whiskey during the night. You know, they used to have certainly the days of, you know, LBJ and Truman and all the rest. But in Joe Biden's case, I saw him doing that a little bit. You know, I think it's just his instinct. I think his instinct is kind of to be kind of touchy if you like that. Yeah, that's the political school he was basically raised in. And he didn't really hold any. He didn't really hold back tonight. You know, you remember there was some issues where, you know, if you go to YouTube, there are all these videos of him when he's basically, when you're the vice president, you're president of the Senate, and one of your job is there's a ceremony where all the new senators get up there and you pretend that you're swearing them in. They've already basically been sworn in, but you're pretending you're swearing them in, and they do this. They do a photo op. And while you're doing that, there's a few minutes where you're there with the family, and sometimes he would get kind of too close sometimes to members of the family. It became a huge issue. He said he wouldn't do it, but, you know, that's natural for Joe Biden. And natural for Bernie Sanders, I think, is that kind of putting your hand up in the air. And, you know, he really is the caricature of himself. Mm-hmm. He really says, you know, let me be clear. And he really has that kind of Brooklyn accent. He doesn't do, you know, he doesn't do anything to try to stop that. Like Bob Dole, for example. Remember when Bob Dole was running, he kept on saying, Bob Dole did this, Bob Dole did that.
Exactly.
And people, you know, if you try to stop him, that's basically him. He talks about himself in the third person, and he would continue to do that. In Bernie Sanders' case, he just continues to talk that way. And I think that's why a lot of people like him, is because they see it as certainly kind of an authenticism of him. You know, it's fascinating. He's been in Vermont for all these years, but he still has that Brooklyn accent.
Yeah. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. That's the name of your book, which you can find on Amazon, and looking back at the Democratic debate that happened in Ohio earlier tonight. So let's look at a couple of the other people that were on stage. I noticed that between Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, it's kind of interesting because Cory Booker started out one of his early times. You know, he mentioned, like, finally, you got to me. And then he got the Snickers. But then he went off topic and started talking about women's bodies. And I saw that you can see the Snickers of all the women on the stage, like, oh, look at him. He's going to try to carve himself out there before we get a chance to talk about it. Kind of like the whole speaking Spanish happened in the first debate between Beto O'Rourke and Cory Booker, because he felt like he was, you know, taken away from that before anyone else. So he thought, you know, I got to get out there and try to talk about abortion before anyone else. Even though I think a lot of the women thought, come on now. You know, you're not going to win when we got all the women on stage here. So one of the things he mentioned, too, which I thought was fascinating about Cory Booker, was he talked about dignity in work. So he went right after Andrew Yang, I thought. Andrew Yang is kind of like banging that universal income. He wants to give everyone money. And Cory Booker went right to that and challenged him with that dignity in work, which is, we're just not going to give everyone, you know, free money. How about we raise minimum wage instead? So I think that might have been something that's going to kill Andrew Yang.
Yeah, it's fascinating that, you know, that this is the first time, the first debate, I think somebody actually sees Andrew Yang as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be, like, for example, the last debate, Joe Biden praised Beto O'Rourke for what he did in El Paso after the mass shooting. And that, I think, showed that perhaps very few candidates thought of him as an actual threat because they were willing to do this. In this case, I mean, Cory Booker, you know, he's kind of a bottom feeder in the polls right now, even though he's a very good speaker, probably the most electrifying in the crowd. He obviously sees Andrew Yang, who's, you know, really came out of absolutely nowhere, about 0% name recognition, and he sees that message, and he sees that message particularly connecting with a lot of young people, and he says, you know, I want to be that. He says, you know, I'm going to go after that constituency directly. But if you're going after Andrew Yang rather than going after Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, or Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, you know, you've got a problem, because in order, you know, those are the candidates that you really need to be going after, because if you're going to get into that top three, your threat probably isn't Andrew Yang. It's probably one of those three.
Is Bernie Sanders still a top three, or is he out of the top three?
Oh, he's in the top three. Usually it's Warren and Biden are kind of competing for the top, and he's a little ways down. But, you know, for somebody who just had a heart attack, he was extremely effective in this debate.
Wow. You know, did they mention that tonight?
They mentioned – no, there was a question about the health of the candidates. And they asked specifically about the health, and Bernie basically – He went and he answered the previous question. Then, you know, essentially he said he was doing great, and he thanked everybody for all the best wishes they sent. And then he had a great moment where every candidate on that stage starts clapping for him. But, you know, he also talked. He talked about, you know, essentially how healthy he was, and he talked about the vigor he had. But, I mean, he really showed in this that, you know, another thing he said, and I'll say this, he said that this, he said, if you want to see, question my health, tomorrow there's going to be a rally in Queens and there's going to be a special guest. So let me just guess who that special guest could be who's maybe endorsing him. And I'm going to go on the, I'm going to go on a limb right now and say it may be AOC. She does represent that district.
Well, they've been
I can't imagine it. Him making that pledge in the campaign, and then all of a sudden it's some, you know, state representative that no one's ever heard of. My guess is he's got AOC's endorsement, and that could be it. That's going to be a huge issue because particularly a lot of young progressives, you know, she is their tribune right now, and a lot of them may have seen Bernie Sanders as perhaps somebody from the past, and may be considering either Elizabeth Warren or potentially Tulsi Gabbard. And I think this might help. This help might help in order to consolidate some of them toward Bernie Sanders. So I would not count him out yet. He had a very good debate performance tonight, and I would not count him out. I still think he's going to be in one of those top three.
It's funny you say Tribune, like Hunger Games.
I think of Thomas Jefferson because he'd always called himself the Tribune of the People. So that's kind of where it comes from.
See, of course, there has to be a political background on that one. You know what I felt like? It didn't seem like Bernie was in the top three. What it felt like. And they do this in the other debates, too. It feels like so many of them try to anchor onto Bernie when it comes to some of these topics as to say, because they give him all this recognition. And they'll say, you know, I'm just like Bernie or I recognize this or that. It feels like they're trying to siphon off some of his votes because they're just they're vulturing. They feel like he's going to be out of it soon.
I think that's true. And I also think that what the fear is that Bernie leaves the race, even though there are polls that show if Bernie were to leave the race, his supporters would actually go to Biden. I think the fear is that if he gets out of the race, all the progressives are going to consolidate around Elizabeth Warren. Mm. That's why I think Tulsi Gabbard, particularly for the anti-war vote, you know, she's going to try to present herself as the person who is anti-war. It was interesting. She tried to say to Elizabeth Warren, essentially, you know, what qualifies you to be commander-in-chief? But it wasn't a question-and-answer period. But she's very aggressive in that respect. But I do think that they're afraid that all of a sudden it's going to become a two-man race. It's going to become Elizabeth Warren, two-person race, rather, against Joe Biden. Joe Biden is going to be the center-left candidate. Elizabeth Warren is going to be the liberal candidate. Mm-hmm. And I think they want to take some of that support that potentially Bernie Sanders has right now.
Yeah.
And they want to get some of that support to them, and they don't want it to become that kind of two-person race. So I think they all are looking at that, and that's why they all kind of praise Bernie Sanders. But also, I think some of them see Bernie Sanders. Like I always give by giving the example of Eugene McCarthy running in 1968 as the anti-Vietnam War candidate. He was the candidate that, you know, consolidated support for the anti-Vietnam War because he was the only person who came in town. But in 72, there were other people who had that same message. So they started to praise Eugene McCarthy, though, and eventually the anti-war vote matriculated from Eugene McCarthy to George McGovern. Mm-hmm. And I think in this case, the kind of liberal anti-corporate vote they want it to potentially, or at least Elizabeth Warren wants it to translate to her. But these other candidates want to see it more broken up, and then potentially they want to be so they can potentially by Iowa and New Hampshire they can do better. And it's not going to be a two-person race.
All right. So before I ask you, Rich Rubino, the winners and losers of tonight, I got one other question for you. And I just happened to look online real quick. It looks like the next Democratic debate, November 20th in Atlanta. MSNBC will get it. And I'm looking at an article. There's four candidates that were on stage tonight that have not met the next requirement threshold in order to get onto this next stage. Those four are Julian Castro, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, and Tulsi Gabbard. Of those four, which ones do you think will make it and which ones do you think will not make the next debate?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer for Steyer would be just because he's putting so many advertisements on that would help him. But I think the performance tonight where he really did not stand out, I would guess right now that he's probably going to see a little bit of a deflation. So I would say he would be one that would not make it. Castro, I don't really see where his constituency is right now. I know obviously he was trying to get a lot of support within the Latino community, but the Latino community is more widespread and Joe Biden's doing very well there. I don't see any sort of an opening for him, so I would say he would probably be out. Of the candidates that are in the race, you know, I don't know. I can see Klobuchar, she's interesting, but as I say, she really focuses on rural-type issues, and she's somebody who argues that she can be electable. But I don't know if she necessarily will get the support. I don't think her support is necessarily as solid as, you know, somebody who's really going to need to die for this person. It's more somebody who would say, you know, make some sort of an analytical decision, say this person could potentially be the best president. In Tulsi Gabbard's case, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with her in terms of making the debate, but I do see there is going to be a groundswell of support for her anti-war message. The problem, I think, is she's probably running in the wrong year. In 2020, you know, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan are subservient issues to domestic issues. I try to imagine if she had run in, say, 2004, when the Iraq war was the flagship issue, or 2008, when the Iraq war was so unpopular, she would have done extremely well. Of course, she wouldn't have been old enough to be president, so it would have been a moot point. But I can see a scenario where she does win debate just because of that anti-war thing. But you know, she has to have a lot more widespread message, and she needs to focus a lot more too on domestic policy, where she's very similar to Bernie Sanders.
So as of right now, Tom Steyer actually meets the two thresholds. He makes the polling and the donor thresholds. So as of right now, unless something changes, he would be on the stage again next time. Believe that.
Well,
this is according to Vox.com.
It's amazing because, as I say, I think that a lot of people are saying, who is this person? And it just got to get into some people's mind, potentially also because he's not only advertising in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, he's advertising all over the country. Maybe he will make it. I don't know. Yeah. But I don't see where his message is necessarily would resonate and where it's that much different than any of the other candidates.
Yeah. So let's look at, if you were to give me the top two winners and the top two losers of tonight's Democratic debate, who would they be?
The top two winners, I think it's Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, because I think they both saw an attenuation of the news coverage specifically that they've been having. I think now you're going to get a lot more coverage of them. I think Klobuchar and Buttigieg made the case that they essentially can get things done, whereas Bernie and Elizabeth are people who can potentially not get any, will potentially be too extreme or try to pass an ideological purity test, which essentially results in getting none of the loaf. In terms of the losers, I think Steyer. He needed a real pyrotechnics ideologically and politically, and he didn't get any of that here tonight. I think Beto O'Rourke, I don't think, really stood out very well. And I'll say this about Elizabeth Warren. She did very well in terms of combating herself from all the attacks. But the question she continues to be asked about her health care plan is, will the middle class be paying more taxes? And she did not answer that question. She continues to sidestep it. And, you know, she has a lot of plans that are very popular, specifically with the progressive bloodline of the Democratic Party. But she's going to continue to be asked, and if she continues to perambulate around the actual topic, this is going to be huge. This is going to be a huge talking point for Democrats, that essentially she really is going to make the middle class pay for it. I mean, Bernie Sanders, when he talks, he says he's honest about it. He says, yes, the corporations will pay. Yes, the wealthy will pay, but also the middle class will pay. Then he says that the premiums and deductibles will go down, so they will actually be better off. And they will be better off in, I guess, the final analysis. Elizabeth Warren doesn't say that. She just goes back and talks about how she won't sign a piece of legislation that hurts the middle class. So she's going to have to be a little more specific on this, I believe.
All right. So people can follow along if they check you out online. Where can they find you, Rich Rubino?
Yep. www.polita-geek.com, or just find Rich Rubino on Facebook.
Yep, and of course your book you can find on Amazon.com, American Politics on the Rocks. Rich Rubino, thanks for coming back on to Overnight America.
Thanks so much, it's been fun.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric Camo X guest line. We're going to bring on Kristen Arnold to talk about the moderators next on Camo X. And joining us now is a rules analyst for the presidential debates. You've heard her on after the debates as well. The website, rulesanalyst.com. Kristen Arnold, thank you for coming on to Camo X.
Oh, my pleasure, Ryan. Always great to talk to you.
Oh, you're in Vegas this time around. What's watching the debates like in Vegas?
You know, it's pretty nice here at the Palazzo, but, you know, in my hotel room, it's pretty exciting stuff. I don't know what's going down on the floor, but you know, it's
so no prop bets tonight for you for the presidential debates.
No, because I have to crunch the numbers for you.
Well, we watched the CNN and the New York Times debate. It was an interesting debate. It seemed like they were a little bit more aggressive, the moderators were, at trying to keep people towards their time until the actual candidates themselves started to snip back. Oh, just no, I'm not done talking yet. They were like pressuring the moderators. What did you think how the moderators handled the debate tonight?
Well, you know, I think that they use more of a staccato style of, you know, please respond. Please respond. Mm-hmm. Until they would get to a point where they wanted to inspire like a true debate, in which case they would invoke somebody's name in the precursor of the question. So, for example, if I say your name, Ryan, mm-hmm. In a question that I would be asking Jane, for example, then Ryan, you get to respond because mm-hmm. I use your name in the question.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a really crafty kind of technique to move it along until you wanted the candidates to actually spar against each other.
Mm.
And so that happened a bit. They did it a lot with Warren. So Warren was actually, her name was invoked 11 times.
Oh, okay.
Which is really kind of fascinating because the next highest number was like 5. And that was Buttigieg.
Okay.
So it's like, what's going on here? Because usually you would get that with Biden because he's always been the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think some people really give the moderators that much credibility or credence that they can influence who gets to speak mm-hmm. and how often they get to speak. But they have a lot of say into that.
You know, I also noticed a few things that would happen. And when the moderators themselves were asking some of the questions, I felt like sometimes they were defensive on behalf of the people on the stage. So one of the interesting things I saw, and I don't know how typical this is in a debate. So when they would question Joe Biden about his son, Hunter Biden, they tried to be very diplomatic in the way they handled that. And they would say things this was untrue about what was said about you or this or that. So as opposed to the candidates trying to defend against comments from President Trump, it seems like the moderators were taking that pressure off of them to begin with. Does that mean anything?
Actually, Howard Kurtz was just saying something about this as well. I think that that's really the responsibility of the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a moderator should basically say, a fact. Here's what I heard. Here's what was stated. Here's what you've said. And they did, for the most part, they did a pretty credible job on that. But there's a couple of places where they took the heat a little bit. And specifically the one about Biden's son, I think they couched that to try to minimize the blowback that might occur later on. And you saw that in the last debate as well. There were a couple of comments specifically around the race comments.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't think that that's really the responsibility of the moderator is to frame up opinions. I think the moderator should phrase a question as factually and as objectively as they can and then let the candidate frame it the way that they want it
to. I think that's the way it should be. Kristen Arnold joining us here on KMOX. Do you get numbers of who had the most screen time tonight?
I do. So who do you think had the most speaking time?
It's got to be Elizabeth Warren. She was on there a lot.
A lot. Like 23 minutes.
Whoa. There was 12 people on stage and she had 23 minutes?
23 minutes. And the next closest was Joe at 16 and a half.
Wow. Elizabeth really dominated tonight.
Well, because she's now the heir apparent, the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fascinating when you really take a look at the stats. The moderators, who of course are the gatekeepers, like who gets to talk, the DNC really wants to make the field much smaller for the next time. So it is huge in the difference between the most time and the least time. Who do you think had the absolute least time?
Ooh, I'm going to say the least time, either Tom Steyer or Julian Castro, one of the two.
Steyer had 7 minutes and 13 seconds. Castro actually was the third from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsi Gabbard had 8 minutes and 21 seconds, and then Castro had 8 minutes and 26 seconds. Pretty exciting stuff there.
Yeah, so it was Steyer with the least amount of minutes. Well, he was a newcomer, too, onto this one.
He's a newcomer, and newcomers always especially when you're on the end, you're on the wings of the stage. You always get the least amount of time, even though that's not what should happen. A good debate moderator would make sure that there was an equal amount of questions and an equal amount of time, but that never happens in presidential debates.
Does it drive the moderators nuts when there's a character on stage? In this case, it was Cory Booker, who, when he got his first question, mentioned, "Finally, you called on me." Like, they make a mention to it to try to get the crowd on their side. Does that drive the moderators crazy?
Well, yes, but no. So Cory Booker almost did that in every single one of his answers, where he deflected and answered a previous question because he wasn't allowed to respond or anything. You know, you can say whatever you want during your time, your 75 seconds or your 45 seconds if you're responding or rebutting. The moderators don't really care unless they really want you to answer the question, in which case the moderators have a little trump card that they can ask for a follow-up question and you have 15 seconds to answer. So they did that a couple of times when they were like, you know, the person hasn't really answered the question and it really was like a yes or a no, and we want them to. So that didn't happen too often. It happened maybe about like once every commercial break time. So they didn't really pin this group of moderators didn't really pin people down for their answers. You could say anything and they were going to be ready to go with it.
What did you think about CNN and New York Times, their, how they dished out the different topics, the way they handled certain topics and the way that they moderated how much time each topic received?
Well, I thought it was really weird in that Erin Burnett, I mean, her expertise is in foreign policy. Mm-hmm. She didn't ask the foreign policy questions. What? I just thought that was a little weird.
Yeah.
Mark Lacey is not a TV personality. He's a print guy. And it took him a little bit of time to get warmed up to the fact that he needs to, like, cut people off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you, Senator, thank you, Mayor, thank you. But he warmed up to it after a certain period of time. You know, the nice thing about this one is this is the first debate that we didn't have an opinion journalist.
Oh, hmm.
That was, and every single time we've had an opinion journalist who has kind of just finagled their way into either a question that was blatant or allowing a specific candidate to kind of, you know, blow in and, you know, get their Twitterable soundbite and be able to, you know, state their case kind of thing.
Yeah.
That didn't happen in this one. I think there were a couple of really good soundbites, but it wasn't really like, I think they kept a pretty good rein on things for the most part.
Keep the rein in.
You know?
Yeah, got to reel them in. Keep it on. All right, so if people want to check out what you're doing, you're a high-stakes meeting facilitator. You're also a past president, the National Speakers Association, a rules analyst for these presidential debates. Where can people find you online?
You can find me at rulesanalyst.com.
Easy, just like that. Rulesanalyst.com. And Kristen Arnold, thank you so much for coming on after these debates.
My pleasure, Ryan.
She joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Overnight America, at least for another couple minutes. Tough to juggle my time earlier tonight between the Cardinals game and the Democratic debates. Both were very difficult to watch. Very, very difficult to watch. But somehow we made it through and somehow we got the entire night together. So thank you for sticking around with us. We're going to be back again tomorrow at 8 o'clock. It's our new start time. Ooh. And Tom Sullivan's going to join us to talk about the trolley, which is kind of a big topic right now. So if you're wondering during the different town hall, not the town hall meeting, but the county council meeting, they presented the proposal that they need more money. But they didn't take it up for vote. So there's still some question of what's going to happen there. And there's a lot of question, what will actually happen if they are awarded this money? There's been thoughts that they could be accepted this money and then they could just use it to pay out salaries, pay out some other debts, and then still close down. It may not actually mean that the trolley continues to operate. If the trolley closes down and they don't actually find ways to fund it till the end of the year, we could owe the federal government millions of dollars. So a local watchdog, Tom Sullivan, we've had him on the program before. I think we last had him on to talk about Prop Z when they were doing the zoo vote. So he's going to join us on the show tomorrow. We also have a gentleman from Vancouver, Canada, that is not named Drex. He's going to talk about growing up as a neo-Nazi. Yeah, a white supremacist. And he changed his ways after having children, and now he's someone that goes and speaks to very radicalized people in hopes to change their hearts and their ways on all of this. Very interesting conversation tomorrow with that. But otherwise, between now and then, join me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. And any part of the show, you can download the podcast by going to KMOX.com/ONA. You can make it your favorite podcast show. Your favorite podcast app should be radio.com. We will see you tomorrow night. And until then.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.